Hello, and welcome to Baltic Ways, a podcast bringing you interviews and insights from the world of Baltic studies. I'm your host, Dr. Indra Ekmanis, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Andres Kasekamp, professor and chair of Estonian Studies at University of Toronto, and former president of the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies. Dr. Kasekamp's work spans the history and political progression of the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. In our conversation, we discuss the geopolitics of the Baltic countries and their relevance as a region today. Stay tuned. Dr. Kasekamp, thank you for joining me today on the podcast. And I wonder if we can start with you telling us a bit more about your background and how and why you came to study the Baltic region.
Well, I think it came quite naturally because my parents are Estonian. I grew up in Toronto, which has a large Estonian community. And one of the things I wondered about as a child was why I had no grandfathers. Both had been arrested and deported and killed by the Soviets in 1941. So that piqued my interest in exploring the history of the Baltic region. And I was fortunate as a student at the University of Toronto in the 1980s that there was a chair of Estonian studies and the professor there, Hein Rebas, I won the student prize for the best essay. And instead of getting a cash reward, the professor forced us to go to the AABS conference in Maryland to present in a student panel, which was a good use of the funding because that way we were able to see that the academic world is not so scary. Though initially seeing all these big names in person as a young student, in fact, was intimidating. But the purpose of my professor to direct me to that conference actually paid off because it did get me involved in AABS and in considering a serious academic career and seeing that it might be possible.
That's so funny because I was just thinking about my first AABS conference where I met you and I had a similar sort of a feeling, if you will. Mm-hmm. Your work, it spans so many topics, right? Politics and history. And I wonder if you can maybe frame your areas of interest a little bit more.
Well, specifically when I started to pursue Estonian history in grad school, then the topic that got my interest was the fact that, well, I'd noticed this as a child already. I'd heard about independent Estonia before the Second World War as being this wonderful democracy, which was destroyed by the Soviets in the Second World War. But when you looked at general surveys of European history, then the Baltic states were usually put in with the authoritarian countries during the interwar period of Europe. And this sort of disconnect between what I'd heard from the Estonian community of how wonderful Estonia was in the 1930s and this outside perception that the Baltic states belonged with all these bad authoritarian countries during the 1930s was something that I set out to explore in my graduate work, which culminated in my PhD dissertation in London, which was on the radical right in interwar Estonia. So the question of democracy and dictatorship, which was later published by Paul Gregg Macmillan.
You speak about outside observations of the three Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, and oftentimes they can be quite superficial, the perceptions of outside observers, but the Baltic region has been quite consequential in a number of ways, right? It sits on these sort of geopolitical fault lines, these cultural fault lines, and its history certainly has progressed in a way that eludes a sort of straightforward characterization or narrative or even narratives on sort of these opposite ends of the spectrum, right? This kind of East and West, Soviet and European developing economies and the characterization of the Baltics on the forefront of technology, perhaps. And I wonder if you can speak about how in your work and in your perception, Baltics are often seen by outside observers.
Well, first of all, they're always lumped together as the 3B or the Baltics. And that's one of my pet peeves. I really don't like when people use the term Baltics, which is kind of derived from Balkans. But I understand that it's much easier than saying Baltic states or Baltic countries or Baltic nations or Baltic republics. So it's kind of the lazy thing to do is say Baltics rather than the Baltic states, which is much more proper. So that's the first thing I want to say about the outside perceptions. And of course, you know, people do get the Baltics and the Balkans confused once in a while. Sometimes it's just a slip of the tongue, but sometimes people really do confuse the two.
In prominent positions as well.
Exactly. And well, that when we're talking about outside perception, first let me say that the inside, particularly Estonians and Lithuanians, often don't subscribe to the idea that they're one unit. Estonians often look north towards Finland. They share a similar language. And Tallinn and Helsinki are so close to each other and so closely integrated that Estonia likes to portray itself as a Nordic country. And often Lithuania looks south in its historic and cultural relationship with Poland. So it sees itself often more as a Central European country, which tends to leave Latvia in the middle as the true, genuine Baltic country. So often Balts don't want to accept that outside perception that they are all the same. From the inside, everything looks much more differentiated. But yes, from the outside, certainly they're treated as one. And on a geopolitical level and diplomatic level, of course, the three countries very much have the same priorities, the same interests, and cooperate very closely. And are part of the same organizations, the European Union and NATO, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later. But it seems to me that at present, when we talk about the general sort of media perception that you see in the international press or in commentary about the Baltic states, that there are sort of two big narratives. One of them is associated with fear of Russia, scaremongering about Russian aggression, the great big neighbor next door. And the other narrative, which is quite contradictory, is that of these innovative, dynamic economies, fresh ideas, particularly e-governance, digital society, which Estonia is leading with, but the other two Baltic countries are also very strong in. So these two narratives, you could say, are in a bit of a conflict, particularly if you put yourself in the shoes of a Baltic diplomat or policymaker or civil servant. That on the one hand, you have to pique the interests of the outside world with your sort of innovative, dynamic policies. For instance, in the beginning of the COVID pandemic, Estonia was the one who developed this first sort of digital vaccine passport, which the rest of the European Union followed with. But on the other hand, then you have this constant narrative of big bad Russia next door, who is a constant threat, particularly after the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2014, and the fact that Estonia and Latvia have a large Russian minority, and thus very often you get people making parallels between, to my mind, unfounded parallels between Ukraine and Estonia and Latvia in the eyes of Russia as a target of potential future aggression. So as a Baltic policymaker, then when you're trying to promote your country and your interests, so you're selling this idea of innovation and what makes us interesting. On the other hand, you also need to alert the rest of Europe to your concerns regarding Russian aggression without overselling it. Who's going to invest in your country if they expect that you'll be invaded the next day? So you want the rest of the world not to be naive about it, but also not to perhaps panic.
Yeah, it's quite a tightrope to think about. And, you know, the question of, you know, whether Narva in eastern Estonia or Daugavpils in eastern Latvia is the next place dominated headlines. And we've both written a little bit about our skepticism of that characterization. But I wonder if you can explain that a little bit more, because I'm sure that many people whose interest is piqued by the Baltics often have a security angle associated with that and would be interested in understanding why you think that the Baltics are not, or excuse me, the Baltic countries of Estonia and Latvia are not next.
Well, perhaps the simplest example is after the Russian annexation of Crimea, both Estonia and Latvia, and particularly Eastern Latgala and Narva, were inundated by journalists, diplomats, think tankers, all trying to see if this is the front line and if they are next. And lots of stories of people interviewing local Russians in, say, Narva, and asking them questions like, well, what do you think of President Putin? And mostly they would say, yes, he's a good, strong leader. And they would ask, does Crimea belong to Ukraine or to Russia? And they would answer, Russia, of course. And the conclusion of these articles would be, well, Narva is next. All of these ethnic Russians in Estonia and Latvia seem to follow the Russian line in this. But they were asking the wrong questions, because these people are not interested in being part of Russia. They can admire Russia's foreign policy without being part of that country. They should have asked questions such as, are you willing to exchange the euros in your pocket for Russian rubles? Are you willing to exchange freedom of movement within Europe for freedom of movement in the Commonwealth of Independent States? Are you willing to change your Estonian or Latvian pension or health system for the Russian one? And there they would have got the answers that would have shown that even though they have grievances against the capital, against Tallinn and Riga, that this by no means means that they are wanting to be absorbed into Russia. On their sort of everyday concerns, they're much happier where they are.
Yes, certainly. On the everyday, people are more concerned about whether or not their local kindergarten will have a space for their child, or the policies they want their local governments to handle.
Exactly.
You mentioned the European Union. And since the reestablishment of independence in the 1990s, a lot of work has been done in Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania to kind of reintegrate with the West in these multilateral institutions like the European Union and NATO. And I wonder how you have seen the role of the Baltic countries changing in spaces like these over the past three decades. It's still an easy default to say kind of post-Soviet, but we're three decades out. And so times have changed quite a lot.
Right. That's another term to avoid when talking about the Baltic states is post-Soviet, because that's long past. Well, let me say that sort of a general observation, first of all, that the foreign and security policy guiding idea for all three Baltic states from the moment they recovered their independence was to integrate as quickly and deeply as possible with Western institutions and organizations. And this came from the lesson of history from the Second World War, where at the beginning we were neutral, and that did not save us from being occupied by the Soviets and then the Nazis and the Soviets again. So that lesson was never again without allies. So the three Baltic states have indeed tried to join every single organization or club going that would have them, and have tried to be faithful members who have adhered to the rules and have contributed. So the process of getting into the European Union and NATO consumed a lot of energy in the late 90s and early 2000s. And it was sort of a small miracle that they got in when they did, because the window of opportunity, I would say, closed shortly afterwards. The Europeans started talking about enlargement fatigue. Russia started reasserting itself. At the time in the 90s, Estonian President Lennart Meri always emphasized that the Baltic states have very little time. They need to grasp this window of opportunity. And it was to the credit of Estonian, Latvian, Lithuanian policymakers and the population that there was a great consensus that we need to reorient to the West and integrate there as quickly as possible. We don't have any time to lose. There's the big contrast with Ukraine, for instance, which wasted its opportunities in the 90s and now is in a terrible predicament, and making these sort of necessary reforms to come closer to the West is much more difficult now. Russia's more aggressive. But also Europe is much less receptive and generous and open than it was back in the 90s towards potential new members from Eastern Europe. And then once the three Baltic states got into the European Union and NATO, that was sort of this Fukuyaman sense of the end of history, that never before had they enjoyed this sort of guarantee of security and prosperity which the EU and NATO would deliver for them. But once they were in, they discovered that actually the routine everyday work of being in the European Union and NATO is not that simple. That when it was a campaign to join, all of the civil service was mobilized to achieve that goal. But once in, they're expected to contribute to both of those organizations and to have a position on whatever the issues of the day are. And if you're a sort of a small country with a very small civil service, each one of your diplomats, each one of your civil servants is doing a lot more than, say, a civil servant or a diplomat from France or Germany. Just think of all the subcommittees that the European Union and NATO have that all need to be staffed, that all have to have representatives from the member countries. So an Estonian or Latvian or Lithuanian diplomat might have to cover 10 different subcommittees or fields, where the French or the Germans might have, you know, one person covering each one of those. So you can imagine how the Balts really have to constantly overperform just to keep up.
Yeah, that is a good point. The workload that is spread amongst a much smaller cohort of diplomats. I'm thinking today in the space that we are, and when the Baltic countries joined the European Union and NATO in 2004, the interesting position that they are caught in, not only in terms of their position in Europe on the eastern flank, but also between Europe and the United States, which is kind of turning slightly away from its European allies in some ways. I wonder where you might see some of those challenges and what you see as the main challenges for the Baltic countries in the next 30 years going forward.
Okay, first the transatlantic question. That has always been the dilemma for the Baltic states, particularly during that time when we were joining the European Union and NATO back in 2004, because that coincided with the launching of the Iraq War in 2003. And Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania hadn't yet been fully accepted into both of those organizations yet, and they were asked to make a choice. And they came down on the side of the US in the Iraq conflict because the hard security provided by NATO, and of course the US is the main mover in NATO, was the most important for the Baltic states. Remember, the French president at the time, Jacques Chirac, told the Balts and other Eastern Europeans who supported the US that they missed a good opportunity to keep quiet. In retrospect, of course, you could say that it was a mistake to support the Iraq war, but the Baltic states really had no choice in the matter because they were supporting their main security guarantor, and this was issue number one. And when it came to the Senate ratification vote on the Baltic states joining NATO, then all of the other hard questions about military reforms, coming to terms with the past, questions about the Holocaust, questions about Russia, all of those were laid aside. And the main question that was asked in the Senate was, are you with us or against us in Iraq? And also Afghanistan at the time. And the Baltic states very vocally were, and were unanimously accepted by the US Senate. But this dilemma is a constant one, particularly when it's usually the French, and it's French President Macron now, who talks about strategic autonomy for the European Union, which isn't a new idea. And that always is very difficult and delicate for Baltic diplomats, because the old mantra used to be, well, we don't want duplication. So whatever the European Union does, it shouldn't be duplicating what NATO does. But on the other hand, it's clear that the European Union needs more military and defense capabilities. The trick is how to do so without lessening the role of NATO and the US. So that's a tricky balancing act for the Balts always. Some of the Balts, like the Estonians, have been trying to work more closely with the French by demonstrating a solidarity in places like North Africa, like in Mali, in the sort of counter-terrorist operation there, which is led by the French in a European Union framework. Obviously, Estonia has no interest there, but the interest is, well, a quid pro quo, that France would be more interested in defending the eastern flank. And France indeed does participate in NATO's enhanced forward presence in the Baltic countries. And it's kind of a plan B for if, and it was particularly the case when Trump was president, that if the US actually, God forbid, pulls out of NATO, or NATO collapses, or the US simply reduces its presence, then on the European continent, in the EU, the French are the most important military power and the ones who are sort of most robust in using it. Now, of course, that the UK has left the European Union. But as for sort of future challenges, well, there are two big ones. I think we can leave aside the sort of hypothetical question of potential future Russian aggression. The big societal challenge is demographic for all three Baltic countries. Since the 1990s, their populations have been shrinking and aging, and that is not very sustainable in the long run, which brings us to the question of immigration, which is a very sensitive one everywhere in Europe, but particularly in the Baltic states, particularly because of the legacy of the mass influx of Russian speakers during the Soviet period. So the Balts are particularly sensitive about immigration, but seeing their own demographic decline because of aging and people moving to wealthier countries, then they will have to loosen their immigration requirements, and they will have to start accepting immigrants. And at the moment, of course, this is separate from this security challenge that Lithuania and Latvia are facing, where Belarus has been sending Iraqi nationals across the Belarus border into the European Union as a hybrid weapon against them to pay back the Latvians and Lithuanians for supporting the democratic opposition to the Belarusian dictator Lukashenko. And connected to the question of immigration, of course, is the rise of the populist radical right, which is a relatively new phenomenon, particularly in the Estonian case, where the ECRE, the Estonian Conservative People's Party, is the second largest party at the moment and had just served in government and is trying to sort of change Estonia from its sort of progressive, innovative direction into a more traditional, inward-looking society, which I don't think is particularly healthy. So along with an immigration is, of course, a subject that they use to bolster their popularity. So this fear-mongering is part of it. And a new interesting phenomenon is that the same populist radical right, particularly in the Estonian case now, is trying to reach out to the Russian-speaking population in Estonia to expand its electoral base to include some of the Russian speakers who share the same sort of traditional values and authoritarian values that the radical right does. And this, of course, is all in the big picture playing into the interests of the large eastern neighbor, whose main goal, as we've seen, not just in the Baltic, but also in the US and elsewhere, is to polarize and divide societies.
Yeah, the immigration question is certainly one that has come to the fore in recent years. And along with changing the perception of immigration within the countries is also the work to adequately integrate people into the Baltic countries, which has also been a challenge of its own. I wonder, though, we started with the idea of Baltic studies, and you yourself have served in the president's role in the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies. And I wonder how you see continued scholarly work around these three countries moving forward.
Well, there's a partial disconnect between the scholarly work being done within the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies, which is based in the U.S., with what is being done by Baltic scholars in the Baltic states and Europe. And one of the things that I have always tried to promote is bringing the two sides of the Atlantic closer together. For instance, the flagship event of AABS is its biannual conference. And in every other year, there's the European Conference on Baltic Studies, which is an ad hoc event hosted by whichever university is willing to do so. To try to bring those two things under one umbrella would be very fruitful, I think. However, there's the challenge that there's this tradition of it being, in North America, a membership-based organization, and in Europe, you don't really have that culture of membership-based learned societies or academic organizations. So that's something that needs to be done in the coming years, purely speaking sort of organizationally about Baltic studies. But Baltic studies in sort of the larger sense, another thing that I've tried to promote over the years is the idea of a wider Baltic Sea region. Because particularly if you are in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, then you notice that in general, people think more and more about not narrowly just the three Baltic states, but the wider Baltic Sea region, particularly after the European Union in 2009 came up with a Baltic Sea region strategy. All of the countries around the Baltic Sea, except for Russia, are members of the European Union. So the economic, cultural, social, political ties around the wider Baltic Sea region are increasingly dense and dynamic. So getting out of that sort of traditional, I could say, Cold War era idea of the three Baltic states alone as the subject of our study and widening it to this wider Baltic Sea region, which is the way most sort of businesses and diplomats look at the region today. Part of this problem of this having a new identity of a Baltic Sea region is that the Nordic identity is very well established and very highly regarded globally, whereas Baltic is less so. So there's been this sort of cumbersome formulation such as the Nordic-Baltic region or the NB8 as a formula, the Nordic-Baltic 8 countries. Mm-hmm. So part of it is to come up with a new term, because the Nordic countries don't really want to be referred to as Baltic Sea countries. They like their own brand or their own image of being Nordic. But a term that would sort of unite both the eastern and western shores of the Baltic Sea would be very helpful.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, if I had a term, then it would already be promoting it. But that's the difficulty, that the Nordic brand is so well entrenched that there isn't really anything that replaces it. This Baltic Sea region is, well, that's really the only option. And the Nordic countries are kind of, let's say, not so attracted to that term.
Yes, well, something that maybe we can continue thinking about as we move through this podcast series. I want to thank you, Dr. Kasikam, for taking the time to speak with us today on the podcast and for bringing us this very wide look at Baltic studies, at the Baltic Sea region, and the ways that we are thinking about the Baltic countries of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And I look forward to future conversations.
Thank you, Indra.
Thank you for tuning in to Baltic Ways, a podcast from the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies, produced in partnership with the Baltic Initiative at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. A note that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AABS or FPRI. I'm your host, Dr. Indra Ekmanis. Subscribe to our newsletters at aabs-balticstudies.org and fpri.org/Baltic-initiative for more from the world of Baltic studies. Thanks for listening. See you next time.